evening, Kip D. from San Diego.
Kip, alcoholic?
Yeah.
Thank you. Want to thank Larry for asking me to come out and give a talk. Want to thank the whole team for coming out. A lot of friends came out to support. James Fay, appreciate you coming out. James had a baby a couple days ago, and he just got the baby home within the last 24 hours, and he still was able to come out and get to a meeting and support. So congratulations. Thank you for coming. Welcome to the people that are new. If you can't get to meetings because you don't have a car or you're busy, you have a lot going on, I get it, but James made it out. James made it out when he's got a lot going on, and he still came out to support. And so, also, if you're here and you're new, and you're kind of wondering, like, man, I hope I get this thing. Like, I hope I can just get it this time. Don't look now, but you're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're sober, and that's like all you get here. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all I wanted. I just wanted a different life. I wanted to be able to, like, actually live life. I felt like life was passing me by, and, you know, my friends were, like, starting careers and getting married, and, you know, all I could think about is, like, what about me? When am I going to catch my break? When am I going to meet a good girl and, you know, start my career and have a family and all that stuff? Like, and I refused to look at that. I was, like, drinking around the clock in a hotel room by myself with a laptop, just being a total weirdo. anyway, this is a really special meeting for me and a lot of the guys that I got sober with. Larry Lay and Damian Ward brought me here when I was brand new sober, and they got me right into service, and they plugged me into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the most important thing they did is they showed me how to serve the group here. You know, I remember I was in Pathfinders, and Larry would come pick us up in his Prius, and like, he would fill the car, and we'd come here like 3 hours early, and then we'd have to stay late, and they'd have us like stacking chairs, picking up cigarette butts. And I just remember thinking, like, anybody that knows Damien and Larry, like, those guys are fucking lunatics. But they were super, super on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were staying sober, and, like, they were working, and, like, I imagine, like, a little bit blending into society. So that's exactly what I did when I started sponsoring guys, is I brought them right to SoCal Speakers and got them involved. So, again, this is a really special meeting, and thanks for the people that came out to support. Thanks for the people that have been here a long time doing service. And Alexis, great job. That was a really great pitch. Thank you for coming and doing this. When Larry asked me if I knew of a girl that would come give a 10-minute pitch, I immediately thought of Alexis, because I saw Alexis get sober, and she didn't do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she didn't get to stay very long, and she went out hard, and it was not funny. It was really sad, and I was just really, really relieved when she came back and she had like a whole new willingness to do AA, and she was just like super fired up, and alcohol hooked that up. Like, alcohol gave that to her. You know, and that's kind of my story. I grew up actually not far from here, up in North County, and you know, I just remember feeling like, seemed like everybody else, like, just always had a leg up on me. Like, I was just missing something, you know? And, like, I was really, I think I was 2, my mom got breast cancer. And so my whole life, she fought breast cancer, and she was in and out of treatment and chemotherapy. So she was losing her hair constantly, and she was really, really sick. And I just remember thinking, like, I just got a bad deal. You know, my dad was this, like, full-blooded, red-headed Irish guy that just, like, would haul off at any point. And he was, like, constantly embarrassing me. And I never knew, like, what I was going to get when I came home. Like, I didn't know if it was going to be, like, drunk, mean dad or, like, affectionate dad. I didn't know, like, how sick mom was going to be at home. And I just felt like nobody else really, like, understood. You know, and, like, my brothers would act out because my dad was just always a jerk. They would act out and just, like, take it out on me. And, like, my brother would hold me down and, like, put his knees on my shoulders and, like, peck my chest. And then he would, like, spit and then, like, suck it back up and just, like, just, like, torture me. And then so naturally, like, I'm going to go to school and, like, take it out on other kids that are weaker, right? So I was, like, constantly in trouble. Like, they're constantly taking recess away from me. you know, so by the time I had my first drink when I was 14, it was, like, very long overdue. And for me, like, the alcoholism was just, like, immediate. As soon as I started drinking, I just got in trouble. Like 7 days before my 15th birthday, my mom died. And, I had just discovered drinking. And I remember, we had this big memorial service and they made an announcement at the high school and there was just like hundreds and hundreds of people there to support. And like, I didn't think like, wow, everyone came out to support. I thought everyone's looking at me. Everyone's judging me, everyone's taking pity on me, but nobody understands. And then we had a reception deal at my house, and I was so uncomfortable. I felt like I was coming out of my skin, and I remember my dad was like, relax, like, why don't you have a couple beers? And I'm like, great idea. It's a great idea. So I had a couple beers, and I remember like all my friends' parents were looking at me like, oh, fuck. Like 15, my mom just died. Like the most tragic thing I had experienced, and like, I turned to alcohol. But it worked really good, like really, really good. I didn't like feel that uncomfortable. I didn't really care. I wasn't like, I didn't have this like deep self-centered fear that everyone's looking at me and judging me. And then, like within weeks after that, I had my first arrest. My buddy's parents were out of town. And he may or may not have told me I could still go to the house and party. But I did, and, like, they had plenty of alcohol there. And so a couple guys go over there, and we're drinking. And we ran out of drinks, and they had their Mercedes in the car, and they left the keys in it. Or in the garage, and they left the keys in it. And I'm just like, yes, we can go get some beer. So we go and do a beer run, and come back, and somebody had called my sister and like blown the whistle, told her what I was doing. So my sister was waiting for me when we came back, and she like she always said, what is wrong with you? Like, what is wrong? What are you doing? Like, she just could not believe. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? And so she's like, get out of the car, let me like park the car and clean up the house for you. And so on Monday morning, my parents get a call, and it was my buddy's parents saying, like, hey, you know, we were out of town, we were in Mexico, and Kip came and, like, invaded our home, drank our alcohol, took our family car out for a spin. And the interesting thing is, like, my dad's response is, like, I can't believe they called the police on you. Like, you, he's like, they should just have you, like, do some yard work on the weekends or something. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. So, and then everyone else's parents are like, well, you broke the law. You're going to pay the consequences. You're going to go down, talk to the detective, and tell him everything that happened. And I'm like, narcs, they're selling out. Like, they're selling me out. so, like, I fought it till the bitter end. Like, my dad got an attorney for me, and so I'm awaiting, like, court for that. And when you're a juvenile, you're on, like, house arrest, basically. You cannot leave your parents' custody when you're awaiting court. And So I call my brother. I'm like, look, man, it's Saturday. I've got to hang out with Dad all day. He's going to, like, have me dig out a tree stump. Like, will you please get me a bottle? And he's like, yeah, man. Like, yeah, that sucks that you got to hang out with Dad all day. So at, like, 10 a.m., I'm drinking, and my friend comes over, and he's helping dig out this stump. And, like, I just had more than my share of the bottle. And so my buddy was like, I better leave. Like, you're just... like, you're a mess. Like, your dad's getting hammered, too. I'm out of here. So he left us alone. And so me and him, like, we get to fight. And then it's, like, an hour later, we just, like, finally, like, stop punching each other. And he calls my sister and was like, come get your brother out of here. And she's like, isn't he on house arrest? Like, aren't you supposed to be looking after him? And so anyway, she comes and picks me up. She's like, I'll take you out of here. But, like, I'll take you back to my house. But I'm down on the Marine base. And we're drinking a keg. Would you want to go to my house, or do you want to come to the base with us? I'm like, I guess I'll go with you guys. And then, so we get down there, and I'm drinking, and, like, at this point, like, I can't even stop drinking. Like, whether I want to or not, it's like all I'm thinking about is just more alcohol, more alcohol, more alcohol. And get down to the base, and I'm drinking a bunch, and one of the guys suggests that we go get some tobacco, and I'm like, great idea. And he's like, but I'm really drunk. Can you drive stick? And I'm like, yes, I can. He's like, do you have a license? I'm like, I have a learner's permit. So we just, like, jump in the car and tear off, and we're coming back on, like, MCAS Miramar, and the guy's like, do you have ID? I'm like, no, I have a learner's permit. And he's like, and the guy next to me is like, don't worry, I'm a Marine. And the guy's like, have you been drinking? Pull over. So he turns me over to the SDPD, and they take me to juvenile hall. And my response to this whole thing is, like, it's my dad's fault. And that asshole Marine never should have put me in that situation. Like, never once was I like, man, I overshot the mark. I volunteered to drive. I don't even have a license. And that was just, like, my general outlook on life. It's like, if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have to do this. And if you grew up in the house that I grew up in, you would be drinking too. So I just was able to, like, maintain that outlook for a pretty long time. And I at 18, my dream was to play pro baseball. So I go to Palomar, and I start playing baseball, and then my drinking had taken, like, a lot more serious proportions, and then I started taking a lot of pills with it. And my dad was doing the same thing, and I was trying to, and we just could not, like, coexist. So he had had it with me, and he kicks me out. And so I just start, like, a series of, like, moving around, just, like, city to city. I last almost a year in each city before I, like, totally burn my life to the ground and have to leave. And really what I like to do is like to get a job and, like, start to like build a life, like, and get on track. And you know, I'm like a really good starter. And my first week, people are like, man, this guy's really good. This guy's going to be a great employee. Like, and in my mind, I'm like gunning for employee of the month. I'm going to get bonuses. And, but, like, by the second week, I haven't received any bonuses, like, or accolades. And, like, the guy that's sitting next to me who's been doing it, like, 5-8 years and been consistent and is, like, having good paychecks roll in, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm way better with customers than him. Like, why is he getting promoted? You know, and then all of a sudden, like something else looks better, a little bit more attractive. Like, the grass is always greener for me. And then, you know, inside of a couple weeks, I'm, like, going to happy hour with these people, even though I know, like, I probably shouldn't expose them to that side of me yet. But I always set out to, like, yeah, I'll go. I'll just have a couple drinks with you guys. Yeah. You know, and then at, like just two drinks is never enough. Like, they're on their first. They're, like, halfway through. I'm, like, I'm so uncomfortable, I got to say I'm going to the bathroom so I can go take a couple double shots at the bar and come back. You know, and people catch on to that stuff pretty quick. And then I'm, like, asking around for drugs, and they're like, whoa. That's the type of, like, reputation I built for myself pretty quickly. And then I got to go. I either got to split or, like, I just usually will, like, continue drinking once I start, and then I just can't make it, can't show up. And then I'll call my family, tell them, like, Kip needs help, circle the wagons, and then everyone will call, you know, like, what do you need? And, you know, they're like, do you need rehab? I'm like, no, I just need an apartment. Or, like, no, I need a job. Can you put in a good word for me? And everyone's like, no. No, absolutely not. that cycle just went on. Like, I just start to build my life up. Everybody's like, oh, you're doing good. And then I would just, like, roll a grenade into my life, and just everything would come crashing down. And then finally, like, the progression, like, it just got much worse. And then I started to physically get really, really sick. And I just couldn't bounce back like I used to. And, like, the apologies didn't really have any bearing anymore. And it just, like, basically it got pathetic. And then I, like, didn't want to be around people because it seemed like I was always in trouble. People were always disappointed in me. So I just held up in a hotel room for as long as I could and just drank. And, you know, I feel really fortunate to have been able to drink for several years uninterrupted. I know a lot of people that will, like, have a bad night, get spooked, and stop, and come to AA, and, like, you know, kind of come up for air, get a few meals in them, and then they go back out, and, like, that's their cycle. And it's like, well, if you just kept going, you know, if you hung in there, then maybe, like, maybe you would do some work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 28 years old, and I got my first felony, and I told myself, if I get caught doing this, then I'm going to stop. And I had saved some money, knowing that I was going to get caught at some point, so I put some money away for rehab, and so I go to court, and I'm like, I'll go to rehab. And so I go to rehab thinking that, like, I have the choice when I can stop. You know, like, I'll stop when I want to, I just don't want to. And I go to rehab, and I was really sick, and I negotiated terms before I get there, like, hey, I'm going to bring my own Suboxone, and I'm also going to bring a lot of Ativan. And they're like, okay. And I told them, like, my dosage and everything. And I get there, and they're like, these prescriptions are not in your name. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm really sick, so they just kind of went with it, and, like, I lasted a couple weeks, like, on my idea of weaning myself off of all this stuff, and it was within 48 hours of stopping taking anything that I was so uncomfortable. I was up on Palomar Mountain. I don't know if anybody knows where that is, but it's, like, way out there, way, way out there, and I was so uncomfortable. I was coming out of my skin. I called a taxi cab and was like, I need to go to Mexico right now. Like, right now. Take me straight there. Don't stop. So I go there and, you know, pick up some stuff, come back, and check into a hotel room, and, you know, all I need is, like, a hotel room and an internet connection, and I'm fine. So I did that for a little while, and then, like, the real unfortunate thing is when I have to go out into society and then people see me in that condition, and then I, like, try and interact with people, it gets really weird, and, like, a lot of people get scared when they see me, and they're like, what is wrong with you? So I go out, and I scare a couple people, and I try to, like, go back to my cave for a little bit, but ran out of my stuff, and I called a guy that that I felt like owed me some things. And so I go to his house, and I'd been drinking around the clock for probably 4 or 5 days, and I was like just coming in and out of consciousness and like don't remember a lot, but I remember this. I remember walking into the guy's house, and he's sitting there with his friend in his room, and he's got a double-sided medieval axe right next to him, and his buddy has a sword right next to him, and I have no weapons, and I'm like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to take what I came to get because I deserve it. And so I did that, and they stopped me about 3 feet later, and I think I like started to fight them. I'm not really sure. But then all I remember is one guy was just like choking me really, really hard. And I was like, all right, stop. I'm done. And they're like, well, stop fighting. And then I back away, and I'm wearing a white shirt, and I look down, and there's just like blood everywhere. And I look over, and there's just a big rip in my shirt, and I realize that they had stabbed me a couple times. And I was like, whoa, like, who stabbed me? And, like, I got that look, like, what is wrong with you? And, like, they start backing away from me at that point. And I'm like, okay, I better get to the hospital. And I go to the hospital, and superficial wounds, it was about 40, 50 staples, not that big of a deal. And, so I had nowhere to go, and I start to really like crash by this time because I'm at the hospital, and what they're giving me just isn't enough. And I tell them that. I'm like, listen, I'm going to need more. Like, I'm really starting to crash and burn hard. And they're like, there's nothing we can do for you. And I'm like, no, I don't think you guys understand. Like, I'm going to die. Like, look at me. And the doctor said, no, I don't think you understand. There's nothing I can do for you. And that was the first time that I realized, like, this is a lot more serious than I thought. Like, I can't control this. So I call my dad, the only person that would potentially take me in. And so they're, like, trying to usher me out of the hospital. They're like, all right, we patched you up. You know, get out of here. And I didn't want to leave, but then, you know, I call my dad. He's like, okay, I'll come pick you up. I call him in the morning. He shows up at, like, 8 o'clock at night. Just hammered. And I'm like, God damn it. Okay. So we go back to his house, and like, I don't know what else to do, but like, I'm like questionably in the worst spot I've ever been in my life. So I just continue drinking. And then the next day I call a buddy and just like tell him how pathetic and like, you know, how miserable my circumstances are. And he's like, okay, why don't you come down? I'll hook you up. And so I steal my dad's car, go down there, and he's like, hey, man, be careful. I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. And next thing I know, I wake up to the paramedics. I just open my eyes, and they're like, welcome back. And I guess I had overdosed, and guys that I was with got scared and just drugged me out of the car and left me in a parking lot. And then one of them, like, couldn't deal with the guilt, so he called the ambulance. And once again, I just, like, say thanks to the paramedics, get out, and drive back up to my dad's house. And I wake up the next day to the paramedics in his house. And they wake me up, and they're like, he's not dead. He was just sleeping. And my dad thought I was dead, and they had cut my shirt up. And so he's like, how'd your shirt get cut up? And, like, my response, like anything else, is, like, don't worry about it. And he's like, what do you mean, don't worry about it? Like, that's really concerning. And so I didn't really like the way he was acting towards me. And so I take his car again, and I just left. And I'm on the 15 southbound, merging onto the 8, going about like 60, 65 in rush hour. And I don't know if anybody knows, like, the traffic backs up pretty deep. And I come around the corner and just smash into this lady, and then she smashes into a lady in front of her. And I immediately think, like, God damn it, this is going to slow me down. And I get out, and the lady asks me if I'm okay. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, what do you need here? Mind you, like, I have bandages all over me. Like, I've been stabbed twice in the leg, and I'm bleeding through my bandages, and I'm just, like, in a current blackout. And I'm like, here's my dad's insurance card. Like, can we, like, move this along? Can we hurry up? Like, and there's radiator fluid all over. Like, the cars are smashed in, and she, like, gives me that look again. What is wrong with you? And I just, like, I tell her just to take a picture of it with her phone so I can get going. And then I get back in the car, and the car's just not running that well. And it's, like, smoking everywhere, and then it finally stops, so I get out. And I'm walking northbound on Interstate 15, bleeding. Like, I can barely walk because I had just been stabbed a couple days ago. My dad's phone rings. I had to take his phone because I didn't have a phone. And it's my brother. My brother's like, hey, I heard you took dad's car. And I'm like, yeah, man, I just actually totaled it. And he's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm walking on the 15. He's like, the interstate 15? I'm like, yeah. And he took a deep breath, and I could hear him start crying, and he's like, I want to come see you before you die. Can I please come get you? And I didn't know what else to do, so I just said okay, and he came and got me, and he's like, is there anywhere you can go? And I said, no. Like, there's nowhere I can go, and I had been absconding from probation, and he's like, your probation officer got a hold of me on my cell phone. I don't know how they got my number, but you need to go see him. And at that point, I was just like, okay. So they take me into probation in Vista, and they take, like, again, like, a group of people give me this look, like, what is wrong with you? And so they take me in, and that was, like, that probably saved my life. Because at that point, like, inside of 3 days, the wounds had been infected, and I couldn't take care of myself. So they put me in the Vista detention facility and took care of me for the month of September, and I was able to heal up, and I got out with the high resolve of, like, I'm going to change my life, and I go right back to my dad's house and start drinking. And that was really the beginning of the end for me. I just sat there and drank, and, like, nothing was changing. And then finally on Christmas Eve, my dad says to me, like, I'm going to go see some friends, and you can't come. Like, not in the condition you're in. I just, like, you can stay here, but, like, take it easy on my booze. And, like, and I'm like, really? It's Christmas Eve, man. And, like, you're the only family I got here. And he's like, I know. Like, I need a break. I need to go see some friends. I'm like, okay. So I just, like, got after his whiskey pretty good. And he came home, and I told him what a shitty dad he was. And so he's like, you know what, man? Just get out. Like, get out of here. You know, I was 28 years old. You know, like, I was that guy's, like, favorite son, and he would openly tell me that. And I was just wasting away on his couch, not doing anything with my life, like, totally able-bodied. And he's just like, get out. So I got really upset, and I took a bunch of his stuff, and I left, and I ended up sleeping in the canyon and in Oceanside, and I woke up the next morning, and, like, something hit me. Nothing's going to change. Nothing is ever going to change if I don't do something. So I went and got his phone, and I called the VOA detox on Christmas Day 2012, and the lady answered and said, yeah, we've got a bed if you can get here today. And, like, my response is, like, what about tomorrow? And she's like, no, I don't think you get it. So I took a six-hour like light rail, bus, rail ride to get downtown. And I had like never been so scared in my life, but I just knew, like, and I kept thinking like I could just beeline for Mexico one more time. And something just kept me on the train. And like I walked into detox and I laid down on the mat and they took me to detox. And then I got to, I got down to Chula Vista and I called Pathfinders of San Diego and asked them if they would let me in. Because he told me, you know, like a month ago, if you go to detox, I'll let you in here, but I can't take you off the street. Like, you're in too bad a shape. And so I called him. He was pretty surprised to hear from me. And he said, yeah, well, you know, why don't you hang out in detox? I'm like, no, I don't think you understand. Like, I need to get busy. Like, it's bad. I'm done detoxing. Let me come get busy. So he said, okay, if I call him tomorrow. And then he let me in, and I get down there, and he sits me down and gives me a talk. And, you know, he tells me, the only thing I have to do to stay there is get a sponsor and work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, like, I just have this, like, perception issue. I ask him, well, what about rent? And he's like, did you just hear what I said? It's like, all you have to focus on is getting a sponsor and taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything's going to work itself out. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And, you know, I got to work right away with a guy that, he was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was really active. And at the same time, like I said, Damien and Larry were picking me up and bringing me here. And, you know, I just started to get really involved in service in Alcoholics Anonymous while I was taking the 12 steps. And, you know, my sponsor told me at the time, like, it's really important that I get in this design for living immediately. And, you know, a guy had asked me a really important question, like, because I'm wondering what God's grace is. And he's like, well, how long have you ever been able to go in between drinks? How long have you ever been able to be sober on your own? And I'm like, I think about 3 weeks. And he's like, and how long have you been here? I'm like, 2 weeks. And he's like, you better get busy. And I heard that loud and clear. I just knew. I knew 100% that I was going to drink again if I sat around, because that's what I always did. I had never taken any definable action, like Alexis talked about, to combat my alcoholism. You know, and I went through the steps as fast as I could, and I'd written an inventory and found out, like, really, I'm scared. I'm scared that people aren't going to love me. I'm scared that I'm not enough as I am. And, you know, when I get that scared, like, my only resources are, like, pride, anger, jealousy, greed, lust, like that's where I end up. And if I hang out in that space long enough, I'm going to drink again. But that's all I know. Those are my only resources. And, you know, so we kept moving. You know, it was really important to my sponsor that I was constantly in action. And at 90 days, I started making amends. And I go to my brother who, who had picked me up and ultimately saved my life and took me up to Vista, and I had gotten in front of him and told him how I had harmed him, and I asked him if there was anything I could do to make it right, and he asked me if he could think about it, and that was, like, not what I expected. I'm like, okay, and he calls me a couple days ago. I'm at Pathfinders, and he's like, hey, do you still want to make those wrongs right? I'm like, sure, and then he's like, I need some help at work, but I can't pay anybody. So can you come work? I'll buy you lunch. And I'll pay for your bus trip here. So it was like an hour and 40 minutes each way. So I'd go and I'd pressure wash seagull shit off the concrete down in La Jolla. And, you know, at first he was buying me Burger Lounge and Jersey Mike's. And I'm like, this isn't that bad. And then, like, next thing you know, it's like an old loaf of bread, some Kraft Singles, and, like, some mustard, you know. And then I start, like, thinking, hey, man, like, I deserve a little bit more. But fortunately, I was around a bunch of guys that were, like, really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous that had the same condition as me and thought and felt the exact same way as me. And my sponsor was really quick to remind me, like, you don't have anything coming. You don't deserve anything. In fact, like, what you deserve, you're not getting. And so I just stayed with it. I stayed with it, and then eventually he's like, hey, do you want to come over for dinner and have dinner with my sons and I? And, you know, then it's like, hey, we're going to the park to barbecue. Do you want to come play baseball with my sons? And like, I started to show up for the family, and, like, things just really started to change for me really, really quick, because all I was doing was Alcoholics Anonymous. And then 2 days before I get out of Pathfinders, I see a guy at the Friday night meeting, and he just sees me and immediately starts crying. And I'm like, Joe, what's up? He's like, did you hear about your other brother? I'm like, what are you talking about? What happened? Talk to me. And he's like, he overdosed. He got taken away by ambulance. Nobody's seen him since. So I go into panic mode, and I figure out, like, make 100 phone calls and figure out where he's at. And I go down and I see him. I see him laying in a hospital bed in a coma, and his arms are black. His legs are black. And the nurse tells me that he's going to die. Said he's not going to make it through the night. And my immediate thought is, like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I can't deal with this. And they hand me a consent form and said that they want to go in and remove one of his valves and cut out 40% of his lungs. And they're like, more than likely he's going to die on the table tonight. But we got to try. And we need your consent. And, like, I call my family, and my other brother tells me, like, there's nobody else I'd rather be there making these decisions than you. And I had no idea what to do, so I signed it, and I just, like, I hung in, and then I leave the hospital, and I don't know where else to go, so I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember my sponsor, when we read Working with Others, he told me how to approach people, how to approach the new man. I'm like, how am I going to know if they're new? He's like, you're going to know when you see a newcomer. You're going to know. He's going to be on his phone. He's going to be, like, more weird than you. And so I pull up to a meeting, and I see this kid on his phone, like, looking so weird and uncomfortable. And I was like, that's my guy. And we used to call it jamming up new guys, and I just beeline for him. And, like, asked him some heavy questions and asked him if he had a sponsor. And, you know, he was on his first day back. And so I asked him if he had a book. And, like, this guy seemed willing, like, seemed like he was sicker than me and that he would do this deal. And so I tell him, okay, meet me at Pathfinders tomorrow. Bring your book. I'll pick you up at 4, and we're going to SoCal Speakers. He's like, what time's that meeting start? I'm like, 7:30. He's like, why are you picking me up at 4? And so the next day I get up, I go to the hospital, and they're doing the second open heart surgery on my brother. And again, I'm like just coming apart at the seams. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So I go pick up a new guy, and I bring him to SoCal Speakers, and we do service work. And like, over the course of the next few months, like, I just felt like I was not equipped to be dealing with this stuff. And, like, you know, slowly they do a third surgery, and each time they're like, he's gonna die on the table. And, like, so I'm just up and down, and I don't know what's gonna happen. But, like, finally he survives the surgery, and he's like, they're gonna pull him out of the coma soon. And, like, I just, like, did not know what to do. I was so scared, and I thought I was going to lose my brother, and my dad was dying of alcoholism at the same time. And but I had that new guy calling me every single day. I had him calling me and taking me out of self, and he needed my help. And I was, like, uniquely able to help this man because of what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been given a gift. I had been given the gift of sobriety. And the 12 steps made me like very, very uniquely useful. And I started to feel something change. And then I read Working with Others with him. And he asked me, how's he going to know who the new guy is? And I told him. I was like, remember when I met you at Pathfinders? Like, what were you doing? He's like, I don't remember. I'm like, you were on your phone being a total weirdo. And he's like, okay. And then he starts getting new guys. Then he gets Alex through the 12 steps, and he starts sponsoring guys. And that's when I realized, like, this is the whole deal here. This is the whole deal. Helping other people and seeking God. And I knew right then and there, like, I don't want to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and this, like, this is my purpose. This is my purpose here. The work is to be done here. And I've been really fortunate to work with a bunch of guys, and some of them are here, guys I currently sponsor, guys I did sponsor. And, you know, this last year was, like, a really, really rough year for me. Some things came down the pipe that I was not expecting, like, went through a pretty rough breakup. And the year before that, my dad had died of alcoholism, and it just seemed like I had been grieving for like almost 2 years straight. And and then last summer, I broke my kneecap working out, and I went and had an MRI, and they're like, you got to go in for surgery. And that was the one condition that I put on sobriety when I was brand new sober. It's like, I'll be fine as long as I don't have to have surgery. You know, because last time I took pills, I ended up, like, not drawing a sober breath for 3 years. And so I agreed to do it. My sponsor's like, look, dude, we all do it. Like, everybody, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Just take them as prescribed. And so I'm terrified. And I go in for surgery, and I come out, and they give me a prescription of pills. You know, and I'm like, I tell him, like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I can't touch that stuff. And the guy's like, you're going to need this. Trust me. I'm like, okay. So I take him home, and I'm sitting in my room, and it's just me and a bottle of pills. And I'm thinking, like, I'm so fucked. Like, and my mind is spinning. I'm just thinking, like, well, nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to know if I take the whole bottle or if I take one right now. And then one of the guys I sponsor calls and says, hey, how many pills have you eaten? I'm like, one. He's like, cool, we're on our way up. And so all the guys came and picked me up for lunch and take me out to dinner. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. God works through people. You know, like in my darkest hour when, like, it's just me and I'm being a weirdo, it's like a sponsee checks in, a sponsee calls, or I'm in the middle of sending a text to a girlfriend that just doesn't get how good I am. Andy calls me, you know? And just always seems to, like, do for me what I can't do for myself. And it's been really great. My life has just gotten really rich and full, and like, the biggest gift I've gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous is I don't think about drinking. I don't think about not drinking. Like, I'm safe and protected, and like, I found my meaning and purpose of life. So Alcoholics Anonymous works really good every time. Thank you, guys.